Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is August 31st, 2004. Today's session number is DEJ 2004-02. Today's speaker is John DeGraff. The lesson for today is choosing time, calling time, family time, Sabbath time. Let's listen in.
Anybody had any things that they wanted to carry over at all from last night? But if there were any comments or questions before we start from the session last night, please feel free, or at any time that you want to interrupt, please feel free to do so.
Just if you had that in an article.
What's that?
If you had that in an article or a paper, I'd really like to get a copy of that.
What you
presented, it was great. Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll have to make one from the, maybe we'll have to take the...
Yeah, that would be really good.
Take the thing and make a polish, make a transcript and polish it or something.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be cool.
So I wanted to start by just thinking, comments from the Bible and from theologians about this particular issue of rushing and busyness and time pressure that so many of us face today. But the first one comes from the Gospel of Mark, the 6th chapter, verses 30 to 31. It says, "The apostles gathered around Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. He said to them, 'Come away to a deserted place all by yourself and rest a while.' For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat." Now, we might in some ways justify that in their case, given the obviously very important work that they were engaged in. But even with such important work, the message was that they needed to take some time now and then. It's another little quote from an article from called "Let's Play in God's Field" by William Matthews. He says, "If we follow Christ's example, we may pray all night, exhaust ourselves helping others, have religious arguments, retreat often, stand up, and ultimately die for what we believe, but also feast and dance, discuss things with friends, and enjoy God's gift of life. The tragedy of modern humanity is the lack of balance between these extremes, the utter absence of holy leisure." And then, finally from Psalm 39, where David says, "Lord, remind me how brief my time on earth will be. Remind me that my days are numbered and that my life is fleeing away. My life is no longer than the width of my hand. An entire lifetime is just a moment to you. Human existence is but a breath. We are merely moving shadows, and all our busy rushing ends in nothing. We heap up wealth for someone else to spend." Some people may say these days that that's a very real statement of what a lot of us are doing. So many of us, and maybe less of us here at Holden, and maybe some of us are here at Holden because we wanted to get away from that rat race that we're so exposed to out there in the other world, the real world, as we sometimes call it. But I think all of us see it, at least if we aren't experiencing this kind of pressure directly ourselves, then we see it in others, we see it in our children, we see it in our families and so forth. So the first thing I want to do is to let you talk about that a little bit with each other. And what I'd like to do is encourage people to gather with one other person that they may not know so well and just spend about 10 minutes talking with that person about how you've personally experienced time pressure in your lives, whether it's been overwork, or whether it's been family pressures, whether it's been pressures involving your children, and what it's been that's kind of taken up your time and often made you feel, if in fact that's the case for most of you, that you simply don't have enough time to do the things that are important and necessary to do that. So I'd just like you to pick somebody, either the person sitting next to you or somebody across the room, and just gather around the room in groups of two, and just have a little conversation for about, you know, take 5 minutes apiece and talk about your own experiences with time and time pressure. Probably want to spread out because... So I'm going to be the Grinch that stole time and ask you to come back. And what I'd like to do for the next few minutes is just see if any particular stories came up that you would like, any of you would like to share with the whole group about things.
Just a real quick comment. Retirement gets better after retirement.
It does get better.
You're not retired.
No, I talked
that's
with someone who was
fair.
Retired.
I was going to object, actually.
Oh, no.
This is good. Some of us have something to look forward to. Yes.
Well, I can tell you about the experience of being a working mom. And I graduated from college. I was able to stay home, raise babies, and go to college. I was fortunate enough to do that. But when college ended, I went out into the workforce full time. And at 5 o'clock, I would come home and I would literally lay in bed and sleep all night. And in the morning, it was a total challenge for everybody to get ready on time and get the kids to daycare so I could be to work on time. I'd have to wake up extra early. And I spent all day thinking about how my kids were doing, you know? And I actually spent less time with them because I was personally exhausted by my work. And that's not the case anymore. You know, I made some changes.
But, how have you made the changes?
Well, right now, I'm a stay-at-home mom. And that's difficult, too. But at least I'm not worrying about my kids. But this working mother thing, and it seems like women are harder on women, you know. Can I get up early to, you know, go get my kid and go to the park or something? And they're like, no. So it's really tough as a parent.
Is there a sense from those of us who've been around here longer than some of the rest of us that this is just something always been this way, or would anyone like to comment whether you have a sense that life is getting faster and more pressured than you may remember it several generations ago? Yes.
Well, I didn't feel as much pressure when I was, I didn't have my family until I was a little older, but even when I had my family, I wasn't working even part of the time, and so I wasn't really under pressure, even when I went to work part-time, and often it was weekends, and my husband would take care of the children. He was good at that. And the only one thing I noticed that I didn't get much time for reading, the magazines would stack up, and I never read any books, which now, since I've been retired and in the book club, I enjoy catching up on a lot of reading. And, I didn't feel much of this pressure that you're talking about now.
Well, what's your sense in terms of how your children feel and what their lives have become like?
Well, they're much more pressured, especially my youngest son, whose wife died and left him with three young girls, grade school girls, to take care of, and so he's really been under pressure. he has been able to handle it very well by being able to do part of his work at home and not doing a lot of overtime and having some help. I go down occasionally, but I haven't been having to do too much of babysitting. Kind of far away for one thing.
Well, when I was a kid, my mom did not work, and my dad worked, but when he got home at 5 or whatever, he was available to the family. You know, it was just family life from then on, and always on the weekends, with rare exceptions. And when I first went into the workforce, you know, 40 years ago or so, I think my wife and I both worked, but when we got home, we had our time to be together. Or she worked part-time and I worked full-time. But then more recently, you know, my wife and I had school and a few other components. My wife, my present wife, has always worked. We've always worked. It's just become harder and harder to find time in the evenings where you're free of what you feel like are obligations or pressures to finish things. That's how it seemed to me, progression in my life.
Have people had the sense that their families do, for instance, eat dinner together less than when you were kids and so forth?
Yeah, I was just thinking, I remember the same thing. My dad came home 5:36 o'clock every night. We always stayed together. And I can also remember we had aunts and uncles in the area, particularly one, my father's brother. They would stop by for coffee a couple times a week, you know, or if anybody had a birthday, we always got together, and it didn't matter if it was a weeknight, you got together on your birthday. Now, I know for my kids, I'm always telling them, okay, well, I know your birthday's on Tuesday, but we're going to celebrate it on the weekend, okay? We'll just say, well, actually, okay, we're going to sell it 3 weeks from... and then we're going to do something really big, you know, so it's always... You can't just... Those kinds of things. I mean, there were just always relatives or somebody dropping by the house, and if you had a family party. And part of it is that we now live in, you know, my sister's in Southern Oregon, and we're in Vancouver, Washington, and my brother's in California, and my other one's still in Chicago. So the nuclear family isn't still theirs because we spread out a lot, which is a work-related thing.
Now it's totally nuclear, there's no extended.
What I meant, this extended family. And but I just remember they would drop by and my parents would have coffee and then we'd play cards a little bit or something, but a couple times a week there'd be an hour or two, particular on Sunday evenings. Our Sunday evenings are always, who doesn't have their homework done? You know, it's a big pressure time Sunday evening because you gotta get ready for the week.
How many people feel that they would be they're comfortable these days just dropping in on other people?
No, because they're not.
Some are.
With some people.
Some people. Yeah.
With some people.
But in our Native American community, if I look at my Native family background, I'm related to about 200 people. I'm related to Skokomish in Puget Sound, and then the Yakima in Eastern Washington. And with families that have been in our Native background, have been large families, and end up with Skokomish, which is around 350, maybe 400 members now, we're basically five major families. So, and we've been pretty much in a sense interrelated. So, I have just coming back to Skokomish. I know almost everybody there.
Yes.
Can I share something?
Sure.
I in my neighborhood, I have a next door neighbor with children the same age as mine. And instead of going over to her house and knocking on the door, I call her first. You know, it seems like, because it could be a bad time or whatever, and that's really ridiculous.
But it's true, you can't just drop in. Yeah. Like, you'll upset their schedule.
Things have really changed because we are busy, and we don't have those times with what's even when you're able to kind of plan it as best, people, a lot of people find out that what they never plan for is what Dr. Richard Swenson, who's written some great books on this subject, calls margin. It's the little extra time. It's just, you know, in case when things come up that you can stop and do them. And I don't know how many people travel at all in Latin America or in so-called developing countries, but one thing you find is that people will always be able, as hard as they work, will take time from their schedules and spend it with you. And it's part of the thing to drop in on each other and do those kind of things. But it's very hard for us. Yes.
Well, I was just thinking, I'm having a hard time adjusting to the fact that I'm now one of the people that can say, well, back when I was a kid. I remember growing up in our neighborhood where you just walked across the street and knocked on door to see if, you know, Karen or Katie could come play, and you'd play in the street until it was too dark to play, and then, you know, your folks would all call you in. And now that we have a daughter, and that what I hear amongst, you know, her future playmates that are a few years older is that they're scheduling play dates. So that's a huge change, is this whole idea of scheduling playtime as opposed to playtime just happening for kids. That's a big change.
Yeah, one study said, for example, that kids only have about half as much, just even in the last 20 years, half as much unstructured time to be kids as they did 20 years ago. Now that's a rather big shift in a pretty short period of time. They also spend considerably less time outdoors. Mm. I think that has some impacts, and I think it even has some long-term environmental impacts, because a lot of the folks who have been most active in the environmental front have been so because they were exposed to the natural world as children, and they learned to care about it, and that's getting harder as well. So I want to do a couple of little things today. I've kind of thrown off the schedule that's on the board, so I hope you'll bear with that, because it just seems to happen that last night we talked about some of the things that I had thought about talking about today, and so forth. But one thing I want to do is just, this will be a little bit scattered, I want to show a little video of people who have had some changes happen in their lives, in one case involuntarily, and in the second case voluntarily, in which they've actually found more time to live for the things that were important to them. So this is a little section from the film Escape from Affluenza, which is really overall a film about dealing with the issues of overconsumption and how we can learn to simplify our lives. But sometimes we change because we don't really have any, something, a crisis forces us to change, and in other ways we can make the change ourselves. And sometimes we do it without choice, other times we do it because of our principles and our spiritual concerns and things, for example. So if you can just press the on button there.
Not everyone chooses to downshift like Vaughn did. In the past decade, thousands of Americans were downsized, laid off when the companies they worked for cut labor costs to increase profits. Fred Brown was one of them.
I think if someone were to look at how I was living, they would say, he's really got everything going. Beautiful family, beautiful home, beautiful job.
But the beauty was superficial. Though Fred was earning six figures a year as a corporate personnel manager, his life wasn't as wonderful as it appeared.
The so-called good life was coming at, for me, a pretty significant price.
He worked long hours and found little time for his wife and two daughters. And his job was stressful. It was his responsibility to tell other employees they'd been laid off. Eventually, his marriage broke up. Then, his own job was downsized.
When I found I was laid off, it was a shock to me. It's a different experience on the receiving end than on the giving end. The most difficult wasn't the financial letting go. It was the letting go of what I thought was what I was supposed to do with myself.
So at first, he looked unsuccessfully for new opportunities in his field. He could have found them in another part of the country, but he realized he hadn't been happy in his career.
There came a point where I knew I simply had to take the step off the cliff into the unknown.
Fred went back to school and studied massage therapy. His new line of work was far less lucrative than what he'd been used to.
I was faced with going from $100,000 down to $20,000 in income. And the question, obviously, is, well, how are you going to support a lifestyle, a $100,000 lifestyle, on $20,000? And the answer is, you don't.
So Fred moved to an apartment, sold most of his possessions, and was forced to live on a whole lot less. Ironically, he's still paying off debts he ran up when he was earning five times as much.
But I'm not generating debt. I'm not spending more than I'm making. I'm finding I can make the ends meet. I have more opportunity to be present with my family now. And it turns out that for me, living simply seems to be leading to more happiness. You know, wow, what a concept. I am thankful now that I was laid off, because I'm doing something that I love. It's what the Buddhists like to call right livelihood. It feels to me like I have found my right livelihood.
So his home is only a few blocks from the Seattle neighborhood that calls itself the center of the universe. Ming Chen and his family live humbly.
The Lord is good to us. Amen.
Their simple lifestyle is a result of a decision they made years ago when the company Ming worked for transferred him to a job designing weapons he was morally opposed to.
And I said, well, I'm not going to accept a transfer, so you can do with me what you will.
Like Fred Brown, Ming returned to school and changed careers. Now he works at a treatment center for alcohol and drug abusers. He puts in 3 10-hour days each week and is on call for emergencies. Ming's wife, Karen Schneider Chen, doesn't work for pay, but she keeps a busy schedule. Karen volunteers at a shelter for battered women and several other community organizations, including a food bank and a baby boutique, a thrift store providing clothes for children from low-income families.
It is important to us that we have time being involved in the community and time for neighbors and helping out older people in our neighborhood. I feel very energized by just about everything I do.
Daddy, what is the living room about?
With 3 children and only 1 paycheck, Ming and Karen have to be frugal.
We live in an old house and there's always work to be done to fix it up and preserve it.
This piano came from my grandparents' house because my mom played it when she was a girl. Now I play it. And then this chair over here, we had to reupholster it. It was a really ugly yellowish brownish color, and I think it came from my mama's grandma. And then the couch, I think that came from my grandparents' house.
Ready?
On one of his days off, Ming and daughter Stephanie run errands. They buy used books, then return them to a local bookstore for credit toward other purchases. When Ming's toaster stopped working, he didn't discard it.
I actually was on the verge of going out and buying a new toaster oven. I had just assumed that anything electrical was going to cost more to repair than it would to buy a new one.
But at a local repair shop, he got the toaster fixed for a fraction of the price of a new one.
That was a choice that resulted in a conservation of resources and supported a small business in our community.
For Ming and his family, saving resources and supporting the community are more important than simply saving money. For example, they buy organic food, recycled paper, and union-made goods.
It's a process of trying to figure out how to live your life in a way that's consistent with your values. Whenever we face making a decision about how to use our money or our time, we have to take those values into account.
Still, they do find ways to keep expenses down. They buy food in bulk at a local cooperative, reducing both cost and packaging. They cook from scratch instead of using more expensive processed foods. For much of the year, their garden provides fresh produce. Over time, they raise chickens in their backyard, feeding them kitchen scraps.
That reduces the bulk of our garbage and cuts our garbage bill. Besides, we get away with a micro can. And it generates fertilizer to enrich the soil for our garden without having to rely on chemical fertilizers.
We enjoy chickens because they kind of humanize the city. And people in the neighborhood really enjoy them. They kind of make us more to the community. And we get eggs, the beautiful eggs, all different colors.
They also save money by driving as little as possible.
I realize that every gallon of gasoline emits 5.5 pounds of carbon dioxide, which is responsible for global warming. And I think it's really important for us to think of alternatives to the car.
Most evenings, family members gather in the living room to spend time together. For Karen and daughter Susanna, it's often a time to make or repair clothes.
Just feels really important to come together after dinner and have kind of a smooth transition into bedtime. We've done that for so many years. It's part of our rhythm of our family life.
But like all families, this one has its conflicts. Daughter Emily, who is 15, is uncomfortable with her parents' passion for simple living.
I watch her TV and I avoid the house a lot because it's boring. And I eat more junk food.
It's been difficult, but some of what's going on right now is stuff that any child her age has to go through. All I can do is demonstrate my values, and I can only hope that will have an effect on her and the choices she makes.
We felt like, it really is important that we respect her wishes too.
As he commutes to work by bicycle, Ming Chen often rides through heavy traffic. That's something David Galvin doesn't have to worry about.
The common denominator, in a sense, that both of these people gained was some time in their lives. In one case, it came without Fred actually wanting it to happen, but it turned out to be what we call a blessing in disguise. And in Ming and his family's case, it was a conscious choice. And they do things, obviously, with their time, but I've spent quite a bit of time with that family, and they don't have that sense of always being pressed. And their daughter came around, which is, in fact, she'd already come around. This is the second in the Affluenza series of films, and she had seen the first one in the course of the time that we were doing this, and apparently just seeing the film on TV that was sort of positive about the simple life was reaffirming to her that her parents weren't totally nuts. After all, it's on TV. This thing on TV that said, every consuming too much. And so by the time we got this show done and we're about to finish the editing and put it on the air, the older daughter was kind of like, well, I don't think that way anymore. I don't really want to be on the air saying this stuff. And then I had to sort of say, but, you know, actually, we want to keep it this way because we don't want to pretend that these things are totally easy and that it isn't sometimes difficult for parents and you know to make these kind of changes. But the question, where are we here, is what do we begin to do to kind of get time pressure to deal with it and to figure out what's causing it for us and how we might, at least in a personal sense, begin to turn it around. I will argue that we certainly can't all turn it around purely through personal means, but I'm going to talk about the personal side more today. And my friend Cecile Andrews, who some of you may know, Cecile wrote a book called The Circle of Simplicity, and she's the founder of what's called the Voluntary Simplicity Study Circles movement, which around the country there are many of these circles where people get together and talk about simplifying their lives all over the country. And Cecile said that her first advice to people who are feeling time pressured and time stressed is to cancel something. She says, you know, try this. She says, even call a bunch of friends and tell them that you're planning a dinner party and they're invited. And, you know, there are a whole bunch of them and it's going to be Saturday evening and they're going to feel, of course, committed to those friends to come to the dinner party. And then on Saturday morning or Friday evening or something, just call them all and say, darn, something came up and I've gotta cancel it. I'm really sorry. You gotta wait till the last minute. Because if you don't wait till the last minute, they'll plan something else. But if you wait till the last minute, she says, and you call and you say, I have to cancel, so what you'll hear is this great sort of sigh of relief. We have a free evening, you know, and it's not already scheduled up. She says, if you have a cancel a meeting at work, pure joy, you know, people, there's this sense of relief because we're all so busy. Cancel an activity, or particularly maybe one of your kids' activities if there are too many. But I want to pass around some things. There may be enough for everybody, but if not, share. And the first thing I think everyone who's facing the whole situation of time pressure, and if it's not you, you can talk about this to others that you know, because all of us, if we're not personally time pressured, I'm sure know people who are. The first thing to do, I think, is to try to actually stop where you are and figure it out, analyze it, figure out actually just where your time goes. And it can be a very surprising exercise. And if you spend, this is what people are advised to do, for instance, who are having serious money problems, debt problems, is actually to spend a month and count every purchase, you know, everything you make, and figure out just where all this money is going. And then you analyze that this is the your money or your life idea. I think many of you are probably aware of that book, best-selling book by Vicki Robin and Joe Dominguez. And then to kind of analyze of those purchases you've made, which ones actually give you satisfaction, for how long, and begin to ask questions, you know, what did I go through to make these purchases? Are any of them ones that I can do without? how can I change my spending habits? People who go through that exercise for a month and start to change actually, on average, end up finding that they save about 25% of their incomes. And this seems to be the case regardless of the income level. So it's an interesting experience. But if you take these points, and I think you can probably add some, but I just want to go through this little sort of little checklist for people to think about where time goes. And one of the things you'll find out is when you just start attributing even what you think is maybe the amount of time you might spend on each of these things in the course of the day, when you get done, you'll probably find that there's 30 hours in your day. Because it's not really as much, but just the first two, if you have a normal sleep pattern and a normal work pattern, there's 16 hours of the 24, so they're gone. And then we look at these other things, and we can kind of divide them into the things that we really sort of need to do for our health, for other things, and then the things that we like to do. But sleeping and working for pay are obvious. Exercise, we're sort of told that an hour a day is good, a half an hour a day at least is kind of required to keep in any kind of decent shape. Then food consumption, and here I'm talking about strictly the time we actually spend eating, because increasingly, of course, that's the way Americans do food anyway. It's just something like 67% of us now eat our lunch, for example, at our desk in 29 minutes on average. So,
13.
Pardon?
13.
You do it in 13? Okay.
So food preparation would be a different category?
Food preparation would be a different category. And it can, and some of these things will cross over depending on, for instance, food preparation could be a household chore, as can cleaning and laundry and all of those kind of things, as can shopping for the things that you actually have to have, I think is a household share. Now, food preparation can be and was, I think, and is in other places, it can also be a socializing activity. It can be a family activity where people do something together. You sort of have to assess, is my food preparation solo and I slam something in the microwave or do this, you know. Then you would kind of put that time spent doing that kind of food preparation under household chores. And when food preparation is a social and a fun activity, and even if you're doing something like preparing something for a dinner party with a group of people or something, then that's a different kind of activity. When I use the term here, transportation, I mean the transportation that you are really, the commuting time, the time shuttling people back and forth to soccer games and all of these, the kind of transportation that's really, we sort of feel is transportation that we kind of have to do to make the rest of our life happen. And that's different from the travel that we may do for pleasure, or the transportation, even bike riding for fun, which, you know, we can call that exercise, we could call that. So some of these things, the breakdown isn't exact, and you have to kind of say, well, you know, am I riding a bike primarily for exercise, or am I riding a bike because I enjoy bike riding out in the country, and same thing with walking, all those sorts of things. Socializing, and I put here, includes shared meals, that's the socializing we do with others. But family meals, I would put in a different category.
And that's food consumption.
Pardon?
That's food consumption.
No, I wouldn't. Well, in food consumption, I think it's just the time spent. If you're having a real family meal, I would put that under
shared family time.
Because I think it's a very, it deserves its own kind of, this kind of shared family time deserves its own category. Now, there's another kind of family time. And it's a kind of family time that we increasingly see. There's big debate among people who keep track of time about whether parents
spend less time with their children today than they did a generation ago. There have been studies out that say Americans spend as much as 40% less time with their kids today. There are other studies that say that that's not really true and that we do still, but there's no question that the time is spent in somewhat different ways. And so that there's more time now that's spent for parents and being chauffeurs and spectators. And less time in sort of direct interaction in dinners and conversation and things like that with kids. So those are two different things, and they may have different impacts. So you have to, I think, when you're analyzing this, think of both of them. Volunteering, the work without pay, I would call volunteering. That's what we do for the community, for our church, for whatever. Hobbies includes time, reading, other kinds of games, things that we do for fun, and learning, just learning for the sake of learning, and that's somewhat different than going to school specifically, which is not on the list here. I mean, there's about three items I'm gonna add at the end that you can put on. But shopping for pleasure. I don't want to be judgmental here, so I put that in because for some people they do spend a lot of time doing that, and but I think shopping for pleasure is a different kind of active pleasurable activity than. Yeah, these other kinds of active leisure, and one might want to understand how much time is actually devoted to that. Entertainment in active leisure, I consider, of course, the hour spent in front of the television set and these kinds of things where we are merely a spectator. Spiritual time, not just the time spent in church, but I think the time spent pondering and thinking and praying. Trying to, however we do this, meditating, but trying to get at the deeper things. What I call shadow work. This comes from a term that comes from Ivan Illich, and it's those kinds of things that we do that are really not fun. I mean, they are really work, but they aren't volunteer work. They don't do anything for serving the community or anything, and they aren't paid work. They're unpaid work that we have to do because our lives have become increasingly complex and because we are bombarded by things like junk mail, spam, phone solicitations. One of the things I you probably can guess that I'm not a huge fan of the current administration in the White House, but if I can say the one thing that they did do that I've liked, it was the do not call legislation, which the president signed. And I think the amazing thing about that was that everybody, was nuts about being called at any time of the day and night. It was one of those issues that had just huge bipartisan support. And it's made a difference. How many of you are on do not call? Is there anybody who signed up for Do Not Call that it hasn't worked for?
Occasionally. We get a lot of, you pick it up after two rings and there's a recording. So yes. I don't know if that's the way that...
If the recording is trying to sell you something...
Well, of course it is. Yeah.
Well, you can...
Yeah, but you've got to call them back. I mean, you're just wasting your time.
Well, you can call somebody else and they can get... owe you some money. I mean, they're not supposed to do that. If they're a nonprofit, for instance, or that is a different story. But for me, it really has worked. I mean, I used to remember getting all kinds of stuff. And if we had do not spam and do not junk mail and some of these things, it would sure, I think, go a long way. But we spend time in shadow work. I put pet time down because pets are not getting. I mean, they are, in a sense, members of our family, many of us, but they have been getting some short shrift where time is concerned.
Three other things that I would include at the end and that I forgot to put initially in this list. One is education or schooling, and that could be considered sort of the activity, an activity like working for pay, because for most of us it's about getting the job, getting the career, and so forth. Grooming is another one, and it's actually a big time consumer for some people, but
it's not a big one at Holden.
No, it's not. Well, I don't think a lot of these are big ones. I mean, I think Holden really is. This is the wonderful thing about Holden is it's a time when we're away from that whole kind of pressure thing. So, and then the last one is just this, what we call margin. It's just having some space that we're really doing nothing, and that if need be, we could put into another purpose. So I'd suggest, we're getting close to running out of our time here, but...
Where do you put political activities and volunteer work or entertainment?
Well, I think I'd call that volunteering. I guess it can be entertaining. I often find it's quite the opposite of entertaining. The entertainment I can do with a little less of, but yeah, it could be
a hobby
or active leisure too for some people. So I'm not. This isn't perfect, but I think if you do this kind of thing, sometimes people are very surprised when they do these what we call time diary studies, and they figure this out. And then when you start seeing, you know, this is where my time actually goes, then you can also begin to ask the question: is this where I want it to go? And which parts here maybe could change? But when I look at these sorts of things, it adds up that there's very, very little time left over for the things like volunteering, hobbies, shared family time, these kind of spiritual time in our lives, and an awful lot taken up in sleeping, work, transportation, household chores, all of this. It's a tough one. I mean, my only feeling is that it's strange that it has to be this way when we can really produce what we need to live in so much less time than we used to be able to, that we're still needing to spend. And one of the ideas was that once we were working faster, that is, we could produce more, it's also more stressful to work faster. I mean, you know, you're not working at the same pace as peasants in the Middle Ages. You think you'd work less than those peasants because their life and the pace of their work is slow. Now the pace of work is more and more frenzied, which is more stressful. And you really need more downtime to cope with that increased pace, but that's not what we're getting. The idea is we would both work faster and longer, and so the two things are coming together. But anyway, you might just want to try that for a bit, keeping track of time, figuring out where it's going. You may or may not be in for some sort of surprise. You may find that things are really great. And on the other hand, you may find that there's something that can be changed. I want to just mention that tomorrow we'll kind of look at community stuff and the impacts on a lot of this in our community lives and how maybe we can begin to change that as well. And then on the last thing that I do, which will be Thursday evening, I'm going to just talk very much about our National Take Back Your Time campaign, which combines both the personal and cultural and some kinds of political and legislative things. And hope to interest some of you in being involved with that. One final thing I'm going to do is just
pass around some things that you might find. I need these back at the end, so but you may want to just flip through these and see some of the. These are posters that were done by students at the University of Minnesota in Duluth, art students who were given some ideas about what this time issue was in the campaign, and then were came up with their own ideas for how to kind of create posters that would bring this message out to the community. And I think you can see from them both that how creative they got and how many aspects of our lives and how many problems the lack of time exacerbates, and how important it is really to try to get a handle on what we do with our time.